okay? All right. Hello, all of you wonderful people out there in podcast land. Welcome to another episode of Black and White Reviews. My name is Will.
My name is Lee.
My name is Chuck.
And this week we are continuing our coverage of Nightmare on Elm Street. I mean Stranger Things season
Warrior
4.
Child? Is this Warrior Child?
Basically Nightmare on Elm Street, basically Warrior Child, whatever you want to say. This week is the episode chapter 3, The Monster and the Superhero. I'm going to be real honest. I don't care. I don't care about this episode at all. I want it to be next week.
Okay.
Really badly. I want it to be next week so bad. I cannot hide it. I have to get it out there, out in the open, just so the two of you know what you're working with me right now. I'll talk about it. We'll go through it. I don't care. I don't care because of how monumental next week's episode is. I will say that, and I will leave it at that. Chuck, you are in for a treat. if you walk out in next week and it is not your favorite episode of the series thus far, I will be very surprised. I will be very surprised, and I will leave it at that. But we're not here to talk about next week. Too bad. We're here to talk about this week, The Monster and the Superhero. Chuck, please, the de facto virgin of this series, please share your thoughts.
Am I still a Stranger Things virgin?
Yes, well, you haven't finished it yet.
Three and a half seasons in?
No, you are. You have not seen this, and this is what everything has been building up.
So I watched this earlier in the week. I watched it again today, and I said this feels like it's the second to last episode, but it's not.
Mm-mm.
It feels like next week should be the finale. I have never been, since Breaking Bad, I have never been so amped up for the next episode than the last 10 to 15 minutes of this episode makes me feel. And, you know, I'll say this, Will. If it wasn't for the last 10 to 15 minutes of this episode and how it crescendos and how it builds up.
Yeah.
And when the doctor comes and picks 11 up, and this whole thing happens, and they have the waffles. They have the conversation. This episode would have been kind of a flat line for me. But
yes,
this last 10 minutes,
yeah,
I watched it and I was like,
"You're on the edge of your seat." Yeah,
I was on the edge of my seat. I have been so anxious. I've had to restrain myself from watching the next episode because I know the next episode is Dear Billy, and I've heard so many things. Like, this is, I guess, like the number one episode out of all four seasons. It's like the most famous episode. I have one fear and one fear only about what's going to happen next episode. I hope it doesn't happen. And the reason why I wish that this was the second to last episode is because if what I'm afraid of happening next episode happens, if it was the season finale, they could have found a way to prevent it from happening. If it does happen.
Mm-hmm.
And don't say anything, Lee.
I'm not saying anything.
With your poker faces.
So it's really, it's, and I want to put a little context to this because I think you're right. I think this is the closest thing to that Breaking Bad feel. So the episode before Ozymandias was Tahajali. And the end of that episode was when the Nazis and the DEA and everybody's there in the middle of the desert and they're about to have that epic shootout. That's how you feel coming out of that episode, and you're ready for what Ozymandias was. I agree with Chuck 100%. Yeah. This very much gets you ready for Dear Billy. It does such an amazing job. And I promise you, Chuck, you can try to do all the guessing and speculating that you want to. You're not going to get it. You're not going to get it. Even though there are things that are so on the nose, you're not going to get it. So, yeah. But,
so
yeah,
you're
right. You're absolutely right.
I have a theory.
Ooh.
That I'll share in the spoiler territory.
Okay.
But, I mean, I'll say this without actually getting into it. There's been someone who's been puppeted almost every season. And I think there's one person right now being used or puppeted or being able to bring everybody together. Mm-hmm. They're making it so it doesn't seem obvious, but at the end of this episode, it kind of makes it seem obvious, but it's just a theory. So, but I will say this. Again, my energy to watch the next episode is higher than how I actually felt about this episode. Mm. If that makes any sense.
It does.
Like, I'm more stoked to see what happens next than actually watch. But it was only because of the last 10 minutes. I think the conversation at the end and just how the music, the score builds, and the doctor and
Dr. Owens.
Owens, okay. Dr. Owens and Eleven have the conversation. I was like, he's building her up. And
that's so cool.
You know, she's now Obi-Wan. You know, she is their only hope.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But it's fantastic. It is amazing. Yeah. There's some parts in there. I was like, there were some parts in there. Murray's great. Murray's just fantastic.
I love when they come home.
He's a regular old housewife.
No, but I love when they come home, and oh, what's his name? Now I'm completely blanking on his name. The stoner Argyle? Older brother.
Yeah,
oh
yeah,
my
yeah.
God.
Argyle. Yeah, yeah. Oh no. Huh?
Jonathan. He's just like, hi, Murray. Like, he's just. It was so funny and so perfect the way that it was done. It was perfect.
Yeah. We'll definitely get into that scene at some point.
Yeah, I know you will. Because you love Murray. Yeah.
I love Murray. He's so good.
Okay.
Buckle up. Of course.
Oh, yeah.
Because this will save me.
You need
me.
To put your seatbelt on. He's like, yeah, yeah, she does.
In a plane.
Buckle up.
I love how he's reading karate magazines. Oh. Like, this is the last guy you're going to think of who's doing karate.
Yeah. Does
he ever use karate in the TV show?
I'm not talking about anything. I just want to tell you how I feel about this episode, please.
Okay, go ahead.
Please. I love this episode. So my guess is that Will has watched this series probably a couple times over already.
Yes.
Good guess? Okay, I've only watched it once through.
Okay.
This week, I got to watch this episode twice, which is my normal thing, but I couldn't wait to watch it again, so I watched it, like, 3 days ago. Usually, I try to watch it, like, just before we talk about it, so there's things that are fresh. No, I just really wanted to watch it while I had a moment, and I watched it again. I don't remember what happens in Dear Billy. I just remember that it was really, really good. Because, I mean, obviously, you know, if you hear something called Dear Billy, who would be writing something or whatever saying Dear Billy?
Yeah,
you know, we understand we're getting more into this character, so I know that that's what's coming up, but I still love this episode, the way that it ends, the way that it builds, and then you get that, like, okay, we're getting pumped up, and then you've got, like, this really, like, sinister, creepy ending. You're like, whoa, we just got all pumped up, and then we're seeing what we're facing again. We're seeing the enemy. It's like, ooh, okay. Like, it really did have a great build, this whole episode, the way that everything went together, seeing all the different characters and where they are, what their focus is in this whole thing. You know, you've got Lucas doing his own thing and, you know, whoever else. Like, all these characters are all over the place doing their stuff, and you've got characters, like you mentioned, Jonathan, who's just, like, uncharacteristically... you know, not who he's been the entire time. He's, like, very different because
he's a pothead now,
obviously. Yeah, he's just straight up a stoner. No, they didn't call him potheads back in the day. It's just stoners.
Stoners, fine.
You know, that's he's a stoner.
What's happening?
What? Alaska?
What? Like,
can you pass the olive oil? That's wine.
That's wine. That's wine, dude. Oh, man. Anyway,
it's like a plastic one.
You know what? I know we're not in spoiler territory right now, but like Murray's entire thing while the two of them are just sitting there at the table being stoned, he's just like, uh-huh, uh-huh, oh, really, uh-huh, I have no idea who this is. Like, it's perfect. It's amazing.
Who is this? Still have no idea who you are. This is it's so good, but ooh, a skate attack. Like he gets all excited into the story. But you know, Murray continues to just grow and grow into the best character in the show. And he's supposed to be the comic relief, but he's also like really, really good. Like he's a genius.
Yeah.
And they put him in there as like the goofy conspiracy theorist early on, but he's been so right. You know, he's able to you know, understand characters so well, pick things up. You know, obviously we had the whole, like, the tension in season two and then the tension in season three, you know, the romantic tension in those two different seasons. And then here, he's just picking up. He's like, they're clearly on drugs, you know, like, this is funny to me.
What's
then
the worst that could happen?
So
they'll hang out, they'll smoke, they'll drink.
They'll get a little physical.
Anyway.
They'll smoke some ganja, experiment sexually,
and
you
she's
know.
Just, like,
she's like,
out.
What's the worst that can happen? She's so oblivious.
Excuse me, ma'am. Excuse me, ma'am. I need to have you put your seatbelt on. Oh, of course. Buckle up. He's such a jerk.
He
I
was
love
the
him.
Best. But if it wasn't for him, this episode, I mean, outside of the last 10 to 15, if it wasn't for him, he kind of made this episode like come together. I'm with Will, with Lee on this one. I loved Murray in this episode. He was fantastic.
He's so good.
Okay.
All right. Well, all in all, I mean, I love this season. I don't think anything's been a stinker episode yet. You know, it's building. I mean, we're only three episodes in and every one of them has been like, ooh, what's going to happen? Now, one thing that happened before, you were guessing that there was going to be like another death every single episode. And there wasn't in this one,
mm-mm.
You know, I mean, there was a body found, but, you know, so I like that they're not just doing, and then the next episode, and then, like, you know, something
right.
like Smallville or any show like that, when there's like, here's the bad guy this time, and here's the death this time, or, you know, they're not just doing that. They did it a couple of times just so you understand what's going on, and it's multiple people,
right.
But they're not just giving it the same formulaic baloney in every episode, and that's what makes this show really cool. It's not some kind of like serialized, here's the next bad guy or whatever. It's fantastic. So that all being said, I'm ecstatic and I'm so happy to finally get this episode over and done with so we can move on to the next one.
Lee?
Will? Lee?
Will?
Oh, wow.
Lee? Will? 11? Jane?
Because Lee and I look alike, let me tell you.
Same complexion.
I know,
right? Yeah,
absolutely.
Indistinguishable.
It's the hair.
Indistinguishable.
Yeah,
I'm going to echo everything. I'm going to echo everything the two of you just said. I think this episode is fantastic for what it sets up. And that's kind
Uncanny.
Of a shame that I feel that way. Like, this episode on its own by itself doesn't do a whole lot. But in the grand scheme of things, this episode was able to set up a whole lot, you know, in the last 10, 15 minutes, like the two of you said. I love how all of the characters are kind of splintering off all over again. And non-spoiler, but kind of spoiler, you get, you know, Nancy and Robin who go off and they do their own thing and they're like going to be like pseudo detectives or like trying to uncover the mystery and blah, blah, blah. And they end up in the library. And I think all that was fantastic to get the two of them like away so that Steve can be the babysitter all over again and try to take care of a bunch of kids. I think it's perfect. I think it's fantastic. I think the relationship between him and Dustin is on 10 in what they did in this episode. Even though their interaction was really small, I loved everything about it because Dustin is able to just read through the facade and see through all of this nonsense and be like, no, you're doing this. I'm not implying, I'm not guessing, I am telling you you're doing this. And I thought that was amazing.
Sorry, not cool. I loved that back and forth.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm gonna...
No, that was like over the line.
Yeah.
That was over the line. Oh, sorry. Not cool.
Yeah.
And you just see them. They're just back and forth. It's fantastic.
That is, that is true brotherly love. It's amazing.
Yeah. I'm still not going to be shy. I hate the whole Ruskies thing. I hate that the Russians are still involved. I hate that he's in a Russian prison. I think it's absolutely unnecessary. I think there could have been a much easier and cleaner way to do this if it wasn't for the Russian story plot. And we got to go get Hop. this season would be a perfect 10 out of 10 for me. But because of the Russian storyline, this season probably falls down to around about an 8. Despite the fact that next week is, like, amazing. I don't care. All of that aside, I still have those feelings about this whole thing. And now you're introducing, you know, a whole nother character who's like, I'm working on the inside to help get you on the outside and I'm going to get rich. Ha ha ha. And I think it's stupid. I think it's absolutely ridiculous. I don't like it. I had an issue a couple of weeks ago when they did the whole Inception thing with the top spinning. I'm going to have the same issue with Vecna because he is jacked in exactly like Neo, and I have no idea why that has to be a thing. It's just, it is what it is, and we see more of it in this episode. And I'm not giving anything away. We saw that before, but it's just like, okay.
Wait, does he know Kung Fu?
Oh, that would be fantastic if he did.
Could you imagine that? I can't imagine that. Just goes,
I know Kung Fu.
Oh, that would be absolutely ridiculous. There's a couple of reveals or some revelations that we'll get into later that I think are really interesting. And it makes me worried for a couple of other characters that we saw in this episode. We'll get more into that later. Aside from that, yeah, I thought this episode was fantastic. When we get into spoiler territory, I'm probably going to piss in somebody's Cheerios with some of my thoughts on the way that the dialogue went. Not a fan, but anyways, we can
move Cheerios, on. Mine or his?
Both. Because the two of you seem to really like a thing, and I just didn't. But I'm not going to get into that now. We can get into that later. For the most part, I'm done. We can move on. Chuck, you can do the honors and usher us right into spoiler territory if you want to.
Right into spoiler territory. With that being said, for the rest of this video podcast, join us on patreon.com/blackandwhitereviews. Support the podcast. Help us grow. The more support we get, the more we can do for all of you. Find us on all of our socials at blackandwhitereviews1866 for YouTube and Instagram, and at blackandwhitereviews on Facebook. All podcasts are free as norm. And with that being said, we're going to slip.
Hold on a second. What types of things can people get if they become patrons?
If they become patrons, they can get some on top of the extended footage that we have here for the whole conversation. We have some great merch. We have some great goodies. We do every once in a while put up extra content as well too that you will find nowhere else but Patreon. So, a couple extra goodies and some bonuses. With that being said, and it starts as low as $3 a month.
Ooh. And as high as 2,000.
2,000.
Two grand.
400 and
pennies.
$2,466 for a lifetime.
Two grand. With that, what do they get for $2,000?
They can take the Lee show. They get Lee.
If you contribute,
it's $2,000 a month.
Hold on. It's right. If you contribute $2,000, we will come to wherever you are and rip apart your favorite movie for you live in person, right in front of you.
Yes,
you have to feed us though. You do have to feed us.
Oh yeah, you have to feed us. That's a must. Yeah.
And
on top of the $2,000
and fly us.
So
house us
on top of the $2,000 still. So with that being said, here we go to spoiler territory. So
this doctor's dialogue, at the end is ridiculous. It is so campy. You're the only one that's going to be able to hit this thing so it can't get back up. And you got to come with me and we got to get your powers back. It's so Apollo talking to Rocky in Rocky 3. That's basically what this is. And it was corny and campy there when Carl Weathers did it. And it's corny and campy here when this doctor who was fired is doing it with Eleven. I hate this entire thing. It could have just been simple, like, listen, I got a way for you to get your powers back. Are you on board? Yes or no? You want to mix it up a little bit and throw some, you know, extra flash in there? Fine. But for him to drone on and on about, you're the good guy and Hawkins is in danger and we got to get up and go. Like, It felt like it belonged in an episode of Captain Planet, and that's basically what I'm gonna say. Saturday morning,
now your
cartoon,
powers combined.
Yes, Saturday morning cartoon worthy dialogue was this entire speech that he gave, and you have to have the music going on in the background and blah blah blah. There was such an easier way to do this. This show has proven that it's above that kind of camp. You can reference all of the 80s horror movies that you want to. You can reference anything out of sci-fi that you want to, and it does an excellent job. And it usually does an excellent job with a lot of his dialogue, even for kids. But when this doctor has to psych up 11 to, like, go get her powers back, it is the most campy thing in the world that I don't buy it. I don't buy that this character would be saying any of this. It would be like, okay, no... This is what has to happen. The world is in danger. You need to come with me. We need to fix you. We're gone. There's no discussing this. This is happening. I'm sorry. It shouldn't have been like a sit down and get waffles and I'm going to have some coffee and you know, the club sandwich and you got to get up and you got to hit this thing hard and you're our only chance. It very much, like Chuck said, it is Obi-Wan, you're our only hope. Help us, Obi-Wan, you're our only hope. That's I did not like it. I'm sorry. Everything else that happened, her getting arrested, everything going on with Max, everything that's happening with Robin and Nancy, everything that's going on with Dustin and everything, and going to the school and finding out everything, and then the clock at the end, that's enough to set you up for what happens next. I did not need this 5 minutes pep talk, psych you up. Blech. Not a fan. Sorry, not a fan.
Are you sure campy is the word you want to use and not tropey? I feel like it's cliche.
Both.
But campy, I feel...
It's childish. It's childish. The delivery of
he
it.
He is talking to a 14-year-old.
A 14-year-old that has been killing people since the first season. A 14-year-old that has been snapping necks and making eyes bleed since the first season. Since before the first season. A 14-year-old that has killed demons. A 14-year-old that's closing portals. And I'm supposed to talk to this person like a kid? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
No. No.
We are far beyond
you know, 14-year-old conversation. We are at the adult table now.
But the difference here now is this entire episode was one emotional roller coaster for her because of everything that he said is everything that she was saying to the audience and to Mike the entire episode.
Right.
And he was just answering all of that for everybody. That's all that was for is nope, because she's like, I'm the monster. Even Mike was like, you're the superhero. And he's just confirming that.
Yeah.
You're the good guy.
Yeah.
You know, it was just confirmation for her to get her out of the emotional rut that she was in.
Which is fine. I think there could have been better dialogue to further prove that point. I think the dialogue here could have been cleaner. And much more concise. That's just me. Call it what you want.
I loved it.
If you want to say it's cliche, if you want to say it's tropey, if you want to say that it's child, I don't care. All of them under one umbrella. Fine. I don't know. That's just the way that I feel about this. I just don't, you know. And speaking of this, so we get the military going to Doctor's home, and they raid the place. They don't find the magic briefcase that's right there in a closet.
That wasn't in a closet. It was like in a secret compartment in the wall.
Yeah.
Oh, was it? I always thought it was in a closet. Like, he just opened the door
No.
Okay.
It was a panel. Okay. It was like a panel in the wall.
They were grabbing, like, their son's, like, schoolwork from whatever.
Why?
And then, because.
Schoolwork.
Maybe something's in there. Well, they could say whatever it is.
Their
first grade homework. Yeah. Well, here's my question, though. So you mentioned something that he was fired. If he was fired, why does he have all these resources?
Big question.
Because he still has resources.
I would change that. I would change the word resources, and I would use he probably still has favors.
Yeah, he probably has favors, okay. Or he has inside contact still.
Yeah,
yeah, but favors would be accurate.
Because we don't know how long he was part of this.
You're right. We don't.
He was just at He was just at the Hawkins lab for a year and a half.
You're right. We don't. We have no idea how long he's been a part of, like, government scientists, whatever. The point is, he was fired. He said he was fired, but he still has all of these resources. I'm just going to go ahead and assume that, you know, typical cop, typical detective stuff. You call somebody, you owe me a favor, remember what I did, blah, blah, blah for you, help me out. Like, that's, I have no problem with that at all.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, it seemed like a pretty high level government agency that did came in like, we'll take it from here. Oh, okay. But.
Well, that's 101 too. Flash a badge in front of a cop, but the cop has no option but to, okay, I guess you're in charge.
Yep.
Especially in the 80s. It's not like they had cell phones.
Yeah. So a big thing that dropped in this episode was really just Max. She did some investigation, obviously, went to her therapist's house, tried to get some info, and it's like, I need to use your bathroom, and then just, like, stole her keys.
Yeah.
So they could go rummage through her office and get all the information.
I don't think that was planned.
No, it wasn't planned. No. But she probably had that as her own backup plan. Well, if I can't get what I want, I'll find a way to do it, you know? So that's why it just kind of jumped in. But, okay, and the biggest discovery she makes in this is that the two that were killed are having the same symptoms that she's been having. So now she's starting to recognize, and they're all seeing this therapist. The therapist is Vecna.
I do like, Lee, to jump on something that you said earlier. I do like that they're not doing the every episode there's a death cliche thing, because that would have been incredibly easy. But we did get the next victim, and it's the jock kid who's sitting in the car, whose nose starts bleeding. Like, Vecna gets into his head, his nose starts bleeding or whatever, he gets the headache, and I thought that was, like, a different way to do it. It's still, like, pretty on the nose.
Absolutely.
Like, he, okay,
there's
the next
still
one.
Happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're showing that it's happening, but they're not showing another death. And
right.
Here's another death that we already saw, because they know it's going to get stale.
Yeah.
And I think the reality is this.
And they don't even have to show the deaths anymore, either. They can just have someone be dead,
and we already know what it looks like. Yeah,
they could just show the contorted like.
But
well,
Lee, you just said it, and that's my theory. I don't think that the therapist is Vecna. I think that she is being puppeted by him the same way.
Oh, that's your theory. Okay,
Billy was puppeted the same way Will was puppeted. I think that there is an influence in her because she's gathering all these people together. Coincidentally, I don't think so. That's just my thought. That's my theory, is that she's being utilized somehow to gather these kids.
I like that.
Yeah.
I actually like that a lot.
That is kind of something that you start picking up. It's like, ooh, there's some kind of connection here, because that's what Max starts picking up, is like, they were all seeing her. Like, okay, well, that would be the first thought.
Because she's super, again, she is super shady about the whole thing. Like, and I'm sorry, I understand, like, doctor-patient confidentiality.
Yeah.
They're dead. So I don't understand what the harm would be in just being like, you know what, they didn't mention anybody else. You know, or just be like, you know what, maybe you should see a doctor. Maybe there's something going on because you all have these symptoms. Something along those lines to, like, put Max at ease. She gives Max nothing.
Absolutely nothing.
That is kind of suspect.
And I think that's why they did it.
And I think the girl, what's her name, who plays Max?
Sadie Sink.
Yeah.
Her acting ability in this episode is just the way she's sitting there having this conversation with her therapist.
It only gets better.
She is I can understand now why they used her for the emotional wreck that she was in The Whale.
Yeah.
Because she is phenomenal.
She does it really well.
Yeah.
Is hands down probably one of the better actresses in this TV show.
I always get scared.
I'm so glad they brought her into this ensemble.
I always get scared for actors or actresses when they pull off an emotion incredibly well. I always feel like they're going to get typecast. Like, I kind of have a feeling, like, moving forward, she's going to be the emotional wreck in everything that she's in because of how well she does it. I hope the rebellious emotional wreck. Yeah, I personally hope she finds a way to kind of get out of that. Like, for the longest time, and I think the go-to is, like, for the longest time, Matthew McConaughey was like the dude in the movie that got the girl in like every rom-com, every romantic movie, like throughout the 90s and most of the early 2000s. And he finally like got away from that and did something else. And he was fantastic in Dallas Buyers Club, on True Detective, in Wolf of Wall Street, right? I really hope the same thing happens for her. I really hope she doesn't get stuck in this thing where it's just like, you're the wreck. Sorry.
I hate to say this, but someone like her, the way that
kind of like Julia Roberts had to cry in everything and be the damsel in distress throughout her entire career. Like that's what Julia Roberts was.
This is different though, because she is like the emotional rebellious type. She's not like the
She's acting out because of her.
True, but she pulls
like
off.
She's got this, but yet she's
she pulls off
it.
Train Wreck better than she pulls off Happy.
Right, and I
like
think
when
that,
she
I
was when she was doing her whole relationship thing with Lucas, and she was like happy about it, and they were together, blah blah blah. That was great, but she does this damage thing so much better than the happy thing.
Right, and I think that because of that, this is so bad to say, but this is gonna sound so bad, but because of that. She's gonna be the next striptease, basically, because of that style.
Oh, come on, really?
Look at the girl who played that in Saved by the Bell. She was the emotional wreck, and then she became striptease.
No, that's
not striptease. Yeah, striptease.
Well, just stripper.
No, yes,
that was Demi Moore.
What was the one that she was in? There was one that she was in.
Dream Girls or something?
What?
Dream Girls or something?
Dream
no,
Girls.
No, hold on.
Coyote Ugly?
That was Beyonce.
No. No.
Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants.
Wow.
Just name a bunch of movies with women in it.
Yeah.
Mystic Pizza.
Mystic Pizza. Okay.
Mystic Pizza? No.
Fried Green Tomatoes.
Yeah, Elizabeth Berkley.
Yeah.
Okay.
Showgirls.
Oh, okay.
Showgirls.
Same thing.
It was basically
sure.
Striptease.
Yeah. Just, okay.
But she was the emotional, rebellious character. She wasn't the pretty girl like what's her name, who was the main actress who dated Zach.
Tiffany Amber Thiessen. Kelly Kapow.
She was the emotional wreck, and she became this adult type actress. And that's this.
Well,
I hate to say it, but that's
trying to
what
break
she's
out of that. Out of the only role she was known as is Jessie from Saved by the Bell.
Right, but even when this girl did, I even said this when we did The Whale. I was like, when she was having that argument with the kid who was the traveling
Mormon
Jehovah.
Mormon, I was like, I thought they were going to do something because she's like, I want to get back at my dad, and I figured they would have done, you know. She has that kind of attitude. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's true or not. It just, that's how it, I hope it doesn't happen.
So do I.
I hope, because I,
that's my whole point.
There
I hope
so
it doesn't
many
happen.
Actresses, there are so many actresses, like Zendaya right now is doing a movie.
Oh, jeez.
Where she's basically going to have a threesome on film. And it's like, you're going to ruin your career by doing this. You're going to ruin your career by doing this.
I don't think Zendaya is going to ruin her career by doing that. I think it's going to open up a lot more doors for her, because she's not just the damsel in distress that Marvel tried to like shoo her into being. She when you get pigeonholed in those things, the best thing in the world for you to do is to go do the exact polar opposite of whatever it is you are playing. And
which is
so,
fine, but what's her name? Who played Princess Diaries, Devil Wears Prada?
Anne Hathaway
did Love and Other Drugs, and she went topless like four scenes in that entire movie, and her career, except for the Batman, kind of went flat for the longest time because instead of doing roles that just kept on getting her money and getting her paid, and you know, you can step out of that and do something different without going that far with it. And you know, when you go that far with it, it kind of, you lose a big part of your audience. You gain a creepier audience, but you lose a big part of your audience, because now the reason why actors will do a lot of, like, Vin Diesel will have done family movies, like The Pacifier and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
They do movies like that because it gets them more known, because it hits multi-generations versus just hitting one facet of people. And it actually becomes, those films are actually, they make more money than these other movies do because of that. And it's a smarter way to do it.
She could
do this film, and I'm guessing, I haven't seen the movie, I probably won't. Zendaya could do this film, and she's probably going to go, it's going to be graphic sexual content.
How graphic are they going if this is going to be in theaters? I have a really hard time.
Probably the same as 50 Shades of Grey was in theaters.
Yeah. The issue is this, and we're going to get into it again. I know I bring it up like every now and again, but Disney. She is a Disney actress. She went from Disney, and now she's an adult and can do whatever she wants. And they tend to go, like, look at all this kiddie stuff. And the next thing you know, Ariana Grande, like everybody else, they just kind of go and go and go and go. And it's just...
So this isn't even Zendaya.
Just this do what Justin Timberlake did and marry Jessica Biel and call
stop,
it a day.
Stop. This isn't even Zendaya's transition, though. Her transition was an HBO series called Euphoria. Where she played a recovering drug addict. And there was nothing over the top or gratuitous about anything about her character on that show. The problem with that show, it was aimed towards a much younger demographic than any of us are ever going to fit into. Like, it doesn't appeal to us at all. But she did an amazing job on that show.
Which is fine. And you can go edgy. And you can go to that degree. But when you go to this place of, like, I'm just going to flaunt whatever I can and do whatever I can,
There's something to be said for going a step too far.
Yeah. And I think this film, it's about tennis. It's a tennis movie.
Yeah.
Of all things.
What?
How can you make tennis exciting? Well,
have a threesome.
Have a love triangle or a
threesome.
Know. Yeah.
The previews.
Yeah, it was pretty straightforward.
Pretty straightforward. Like, it's going to be pretty, pretty out there.
I saw all the memes floating around Reddit and Twitter of Tom Holland just looking miserable.
Yeah.
I hope Sadie Sink, though, doesn't go this direction, though, because if she doesn't, she has such a phenomenal career ahead of her. If she just maintains
I don't disagree.
I have no problem with people who, you know, they're not typecasted, but they flow in and out of two or three different genres of movies because they're making money. Yeah, Tom Cruise did that for all his life. And when he did Eyes Wide Shut, it fell flat. It went nowhere. It was a bad movie. And he did it with his wife, of all people. Like, it was a bad movie.
Well, that was a mistake there. He decided to make a movie with his wife.
Movie with your wife. Like,
how?
What?
How?
I don't know. It was dumb.
That made no sense. Anyways, I want to move on from talking about Sadie Sink. I think we've circled that enough. Let's just move. Okay,
You're going to go to Hop?
Hop is in prison. Wait.
Do we call him Hop now because of his foot?
Hop.
Go for it. Well, he wasn't hopping. He toughed through it when he was making his way back to that cell.
Would have to hop now.
The one thing I don't like about this is when he's taking the cuff off of his foot, because he had it broken, and you hear the flesh, like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That was a little, I don't think that would actually happen.
Neither do I. I think it wasn't spongy. I think you would hear crunching of bone, if anything. You wouldn't feel, like, the flapping of flesh. I don't know.
Yeah, it's like a big sponge. And I'm with you. So it was painful.
It looked super painful. It looked painful. They pulled it off really well. But the whole thing is, there's another prisoner. Hop gives him his bread and his soup and tells him to swing the sledgehammer at the chain around his ankle. And it is done. And...
Ow.
Yeah.
Ow.
I
Why is the prisoner
really...
not saying anything?
I don't know.
Why would
prisoners.
He?
Yeah.
He's obviously trying to escape.
Yeah, but why would he say anything?
Because he got bread and soup.
So
what? Of all things to bribe somebody with.
Well, what else do you got? What else do you have?
You got nothing else. You get
here,
the bread and the soup, and then you say something.
You
still win.
Foot off, I'll give you my foot. How about that?
Because if he says something, now he's in good with the guards, and he might actually get better treatment.
I don't think that's going to happen.
Chuck's planning his prison stay right now.
So this is...
He's coming up with ideas.
You have to remember, this is a prison that not a whole lot of people know about in Soviet Russia.
They're in Alaska.
No, they're in Russia.
They're in Russia.
They get brought to Alaska.
They're in Russia.
They're in Russia.
He is in a Russian prison during Soviet Union time.
It's Russia. The thing is, they had to go to Alaska to meet the pilot who's going to fly back to Russia.
Which is ridiculous.
To go pick up Hopper.
Which is ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. Yeah. But he's in Russia. So,
Welcome to Alaska. Oh, this is spring.
My problem with this is I don't care how strong or tough you are. A guy that size swinging a sledgehammer at your ankle?
Nope.
No.
No.
Absolutely not. You're going down.
I do.
You're not toughing that out.
Right. I do appreciate that they made David Harbour actually lose weight.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Like,
you
could
see it
up
in his face. He looks so emaciated.
His neck
looks
there.
It is wild what he put his body through for this. That's insane.
Yep.
I think they did a great job, because if he maintained the same weight that he did a year prior to when he was actually in Hawkins and he was still that way, it wouldn't make sense.
It wouldn't make any sense.
He must have. But imagine going through that. Like, he gained all the weight or he was the same. He was just him for the first three seasons. And he loses all this weight for season four. Then he gains three back plus some to become Santa.
Yep.
Like, your body, like, it's gonna do a toll on your body.
Yeah. I don't know how they do it. That's how I know I couldn't be an actor. I don't know how they do that with their weight. I have no idea.
Well, the reality is, if your job is literally just to be, like, seen, that's all you have to focus on. It's like, good. The reason why we don't change our bodies in crazy ways is because we have other things going on in our lives for the most part. Like, people who say, oh, I'm too fat, I can't lose weight, or, oh, you know, I need to gain weight for this or that, whatever. It's like, if that's your job, you will do it because you're paid to do it.
Sure.
Because that's all you should be doing when you're not actually, like, shooting.
Well, they have ways of now, like even The Whale. Brendan Fraser put on 50, 60 pounds, and the rest of it was all.
But I don't think you can put on a defat suit. I don't think that's a thing.
No.
No, but I'm saying, like...
No, you want to talk about...
Lose the weight, keep it off, and then put the fat suit on when it's needed.
Crazy weight loss. You talk about Christian Bale and Adrian Brody.
Yeah.
And was it The Fighter or Brothers?
The Fighter?
The Fighter. No,
well,
was,
in The Fighter, they were brothers.
It was The Machinist.
The Machinist, too. But Adrian Brody in The Jacket.
Yes.
That scared me.
Those are the two movies.
Like, how you got yourself that thin and didn't have some serious medical issues afterwards is insane to me.
Or as big as people get for other things and have the same, have massive, like, Brendan Fraser must have gone through some massive stuff for that.
Yeah.
But I think.
Well, I mean, he was already heavier. You know, and he's just like, oh, gain some more weight and then do prosthetics? Perfect, I'll do it. And he did.
Right.
Yeah.
He's not in the shape that he was in. He's not George of the Jungle anymore.
No.
You know? Which he said was, like, horrible. He said that was the worst time of his life.
Getting in shape for George of the Jungle?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was in amazing shape for that.
Yeah.
Like, the best shape of his life because he was...
Oh, he was sexiest man of the year when that movie came out.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
Jeez, even agree. Like, yes.
Even if you watch, well,
it
even
was
when
the
you,
hair.
Oh yeah,
he was Fabio.
Yeah. Even when you watch,
he looked good, pretty darn good.
Even when you watch Oppenheimer, he was thick. He was very, very thick in that movie. So
yeah,
yeah. Because I said he was still losing weight from The Whale.
Yeah.
Hop though, David Harbour. I mean, he played in the new movie GTO. Was it GTO? Yeah, Gran Turismo.
Yeah.
And I'm willing to bet that because of just from this, from Violent Night, we're going to see more of David Harbour in the next couple of years to come. Then
I hope so.
I hope so too.
He does he's a phenomenal actor.
I'd like to see him. And don't take this the wrong way. I mean nothing against this man and his family.
Here we
who
go.
Originally did this, but I could see him in like a Die Hard type. In like Die Hard type roles. I mean, after seeing him do the Santa Claus thing, I could see like if they were to ever like try to like, I wouldn't say I wouldn't say remake, but maybe like a reboot where they go somewhere further, having like him be like another cop doing similar type of situation. I could see him pulling off a Die Hard type, the way that he handles things, the way that he talks, you know, the way that I could see that
the rogue clearly cop not in a bad predicament.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could totally see him
walking tall
type
deal.
Yeah.
Sure.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I can see that with him. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
I see that. I see that for him.
I can't wait to see him come back to Hawkins and take on the sheriff who's there now.
Take on? You mean his buddy that used to work under him? Like,
how would that sound?
I'm just saying, well.
I don't think that's a big deal. They'd be like, oh, you're back, Hop. All right.
Bye.
So, yeah. Moving on from that. Nancy and Rob in the library.
Okay. Now, just so I'm not missing something here, there's this whole back and forth, and Nancy is just so annoyed with Robin.
Yes, she is.
So annoyed. And is it only because of whatever's going on with her and her thoughts for Steve?
I think so.
Like she said? Okay. Because, I mean, other than that, is she... I mean, it wouldn't be like her to just be annoyed with Robin just to be annoyed with Robin.
No, she's
Robin is annoying.
She's annoyed with Robin because she thinks Robin and Steve are a thing. That's the way I'm taking
it. And even though she's not like interested in being in a relationship with Steve, it's just, you know, that's just what women do, I guess. I don't know.
Chuck.
So, thoughts, Chuck?
So, apparently she's not interested in Steve.
Well, I mean, no, I'm just saying like she's with Jonathan.
Yeah, she's totally with Jonathan.
Yeah. It's not subtle.
It's done. Her and Jonathan are done.
It's so bad. It's so bad. And I feel so bad
for Jonathan.
But she and Jonathan
haven't even spoken yet, so I don't understand.
This is what I was saying last time. After a week of being this far away.
Yeah.
It never lasts. It should be done.
Yeah, pretty
Eleven
much.
And Mike should be done.
Pretty much, yeah. I think it's kind
of... And you
well, Eleven and Mike are kind of done, remember? From Mike!
And even Dustin calls it out.
Yeah.
Yes, he does.
So, and I think that is a fantastic
you
conversation.
Talk about
I'm going to punch you in the teeth.
You want to talk about the meltdown that you just had out there for Nancy? Can we talk about this? That's what I was talking about earlier. Like, he's like, you're alluding that I still have a thing for Nancy. No, I'm telling you that you still have a thing for Nancy, blah, blah, blah. Dustin pulled that off wonderfully. That was amazing.
Oh,
it was perfect.
I'm going to knock your teeth back out.
Yeah.
Whoa. Not
yeah.
cool.
Not cool.
Oh,
it's a little bit much.
Sorry, too far.
It's a little bit much. But aside from Nancy and Robin being annoyed with one another until they're not annoyed with one another, they're going through a whole bunch of papers and they find your
Victor
80s equivalent
Freeze.
To tabloid sensationalism,
yes.
conspiracy
yes.
theorist.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah.
And they find Victor Freeze.
Pretty much.
And what happened in the
Victor
50s.
Freeze.
Pretty much.
Everybody chill.
They find a story
this
about
book,
this guy
I'm
named
sorry,
Victor
this,
Creole. And he thought
this
that
house
his house
that they use looked
nice
just
forecast.
Like that.
A freeze is coming.
It looked just like the house in
Amityville Horror.
Amityville Horror.
No,
yes,
it didn't.
You.
Amityville
yes,
Horror
it
is very distinct.
It
they gave it the
it's,
same feel.
It's very
except for
much
the windows,
Amityville
they
Horror.
Gave
the windows are very
feel.
Distinct. That's the whole thing about Amityville Horror is. Anyway,
the story is deal. Of a house that is possessed, and the guy living there went crazy. That is the story.
And
this is Amityville Horror through and through.
And it's the same house that Vecna is now living in the Upside Down.
No, he's not living.
The exact
he's being
same house.
Jacked in, just you know.
Whatever.
We're gonna come calling it that.
It's
life
it's,
with the symptoms.
It's Dracula.
Is there any other choice?
It's Dracula. He's Dracula with all the bats flying around.
What choice do I have?
Yeah.
You know.
The bats.
Oh.
So
bad. They basically come across a story about a guy who was living there named Victor Creel who went crazy because he thought his house was possessed and people died. Nobody believed him. They locked him up, whatever, years ago and everything. And here we are with this story about spirits and it's haunted and in 1959.
And now it's real. Yes.
Yeah. Which makes you go, like, okay, then what is this? What's happening here? I've seen the whole season, and I don't remember how it all makes sense and comes together. But it's such a cool story.
Well, how it makes sense is Nancy goes into the Upside Down and brings Fred Krueger into the real life and then kills him.
No, his name was Freddie Benson. Fred Benson. And then he gets thrown into the middle of the road all twisted up and everything because
No. What?
The kid.
What? I wasn't talking about
the editor, Freddie Benson.
You completely missed what I said.
Yeah.
Nancy goes into the upside down and takes Freddy Krueger out and then kills him.
We've had this talk. I know.
Okay. So that's where you're at.
You're
think
nothing.
That Nancy's going to go into the Upside Down and
drag
Freddy.
No, I was being facetious. I was trying to be, it was a joke.
Okay, it's fine.
The worst thing about that is they did the exact same thing in Freddy versus Jason as if it was, and Freddy was like surprised, like it was a new idea. And then Jason just hands his butt to him and, you know, until he winks at the end. And you're like, what?
It never ends.
Unreal.
Yeah, so this whole conversation, when they all leave the rink, because it starts off at the rink and everybody is, you know, this, what is her name? Angela, whatever her name is. She's all crying. I'm at Rinkomania.
I think.
Blah. And, you know, the cops that come would never arrest her. She's 14 years old. They're never going to arrest her without parents there. They might have a conversation with her and then wait till mom and dad get back before they do something. They're not going to arrest her, fingerprint her, give her her little sign, take the pictures, which she didn't even do right because it's front side, not the side. Like you have to they missed this whole thing up. but that would never happen. And then you
not,
have Mike.
Not
like,
true. Not true. I stole a CD once from Best Buy and got caught. I was absolutely put into cuffs. I was absolutely arrested.
Were you at Best Buy when you got caught?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, not from your own home. Yeah.
Right. That's what he's talking about.
I'm not going to drag you at 14 years old out of your home without your parents around.
Probably not.
So
Hold on. What was the CD?
I think it was Nirvana's MTV Unplugged.
Oh, no, it was the Grease soundtrack.
I was going to say, if it was like High School Musical 2.
No, he was too young for that. It was the Grease soundtrack.
Yeah. You're right.
Because
Grease just came out.
Yeah, it did.
No, wait a second. Chuck, you're the old man here.
We come from the same decade.
Yeah.
Yeah, you make fun of me for being like a few years older than you.
Yeah, pretty much.
Like, we're all from the 80s. It's not like...
We're not 40.
You're 36.
Not 40.
Haven't we
I'm
been
not
through
40
this before?
Either.
I know you're older than 40.
Yes.
You're in a new decade.
He is older than 40 and he's in better shape than both of us.
This is true.
So
the round is also a shape.
Sure. So
I like round.
This conversation that happens when they all get back from the rink and Murray's there and he's like, you guys want some risotto or whatever it was? And they're like, yeah. So they sit down, right?
Jonathan was ecstatic. How's the risotto? Oh, it's so good.
It's so good. That's the only thing he responds to. And Joyce and Murray are having this conversation back and forth. And they're almost giving this impression like Joyce and Murray are like going off together.
Yeah.
That's how Will kind of takes it at first.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
It's kind of weird.
Like, who's this random guy that we've never seen before?
He's like, I'm a perfect housewife, you know?
Regular little housewife.
Yeah.
I loved it. Were they playing, like, Russian music again? Like,
I don't know.
something was playing. The music that was playing was very loud and obnoxious.
I don't
and
remember.
It was like, what's going on in the house? And it's just like, hey,
I will say
risotto.
So and then they get on the plane and Murray, his just the way he just spouts off what he spouts off. She's like, should we have told the kids? He's like, what? No, you're doing the responsible thing. Well, what could happen? Well, you know, they might, you know, dabble with some drinking, you know, experiment with some ganja.
Smoke a bunch of ganja,
you know, get drunk, experiment sexually, you know, nothing huge. And she's just sitting there like
mortified.
How is Joy so oblivious? That's my big thing coming out of this. Like, they're at the table and Jonathan is high.
He is very, very, very high. He's
not
gone.
Mistaken wine for olive oil. High. Food on his face. High.
High.
And she
at least it wasn't
an ice
skate. Clean off. Doesn't get it.
She doesn't understand what's happening.
Is anybody else like does it seem super shocking that they changed his character so much?
No.
Really?
No, because that's when I started dabbling.
He's a teenager. 18,
19.
Yeah, I know, but it's like his character before was so, over-responsible. Is this just
I'll
like,
say this.
Is this like his Rumspringa, where he's just like,
my
throw caution to the wind? And
no, because in my senior class, the class president, all the bigwig people, 10 years later, 5 years later, half of them were drug addicts. It's a common, they're on top of the world for a while and then they crash and burn. And
he was never on top of the world.
Not really.
He was, well, in a sense, he was kind of like, I hate to say his name.
He was snapping pervy pics in the woods.
He was Bob Newby. Bob Newby peaked with Joyce and he's peaking with Nancy. It's
probably.
And now it's downhill.
Do I think it's
I'm
really...
dating Nancy Wheeler.
Look,
look at me.
I don't think it's weird, but I'm not surprised. This is typical 17, 18-year-old behavior. You know,
I guess so. It's just it's weird for me. I don't know. Like, I don't mind it. I think it fits in with what they're doing, and I get it. It's just like it's such a jump that you're like, whoa, like,
well, it's a year later and he's in a completely different place
and he's hanging out with his friend and he's just, I think that was the big thing.
With the wrong crowd.
I mean, we had that conversation in the first episode where he's just like, what am I supposed to do? He goes, you need to smoke more. He's like, yeah, that must be it. Quick.
Yeah.
He's like, which one is it?
Yeah.
Which one is it? Like, he's freaking out because he wants to not think.
Yeah.
He's doing it on purpose to forget.
Yes.
How he feels. Like,
and
what
I think it goes into something else that you just said too. This is somebody who's been overly responsible for all of his life, and now there's like a perfect opportunity for him. Exactly, a perfect opportunity for him to be a know-nothing teenager, which is probably what he wants right now. And here we go.
Yeah.
I don't have to be responsible. Everything is taken care of. Will's safe. He's old enough now that he can take care of himself. Mom is doing good. I have nothing to do. I'm gonna cut loose for a little while,
well,
and I'm just gonna.
Can somebody please give Will shorts, like a new wardrobe? He's still wearing the same shorts he wore when he was like 9.
I
in the first
have
season.
To comment on this. When it comes
on
to
the shorts,
Will. It's the next morning. They had kind of a thing at the kitchen table. 11 gets up and leaves. The next morning, they're sitting down for breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
Mike grabs the plate of Eggos for 11 and off to her room he goes. And Will looks so defeated that his friend left. The look on his face is absolutely pathetic. This is pitiful. This is absolutely pitiful.
That's pitiful. The fact that the syrup and the waffle on that plate doesn't even like move. It's just like solidified to the plate. You could tell it was a prop. That was pretty bad.
Yeah.
But back to Jonathan, you know, this stage that he's in is just a blip.
Blip. Blip.
Yeah. Unreal.
Imagine being the three of them in the back of this, in the back of the you know.
11 just crushed some girl's nose in with a roller skate. They're all like traumatized because of what happened. Blip, 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 like. Okay.
You're sitting in the back of the mystery machine, and yeah. and they're blipping up in the front, and you're like, what is going on? I love the next day, because when Jonathan's not high, he's
like, Jonathan again.
And I love how they're watching the Ewok show. That was fantastic.
That was really cool.
I loved that callback. The Police Academy 3 callback was great.
Mm.
It's supposed to be a stupid movie.
Yeah, the movie's supposed to suck.
Was 3, was that Citizens on Patrol? I don't remember that. It's either 3 or 4.
I remember that movie not being great. I remember that. That movie wasn't...
That's probably why they said it.
Yeah.
I feel like that's the one where Bobcat Goldthwait became a cop and he wasn't just a gang member anymore.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. So I haven't watched... I don't know if I watched them all in order. I don't remember which one's which, but those movies are still fun.
So I was thinking this. Imagine at the very end of this episode, I don't know if Will's never seen the movie, but at the very end when you hear, you see Max walking down the hall and you see the clock, and all of a sudden you hear, Max.
Yes, continue.
Max. Imagine it just cutting to Max Goof's dream and all of a sudden you hear, Max. Oh, Max.
Yeah, there's not many Maxes that I know, so that's kind of my first thought, too, when I hear Max.
Well, it was just Max. I'm like, all I heard was Max, and I'm like, oh, here we go.
So I am
but it just ends with his face and his eyes.
No, just
and you're
his
like,
eyes. Yeah. It's like just it's, this part of his face.
It's creepy enough, but it's perfect.
It's perfect.
You're like,
it's perfect.
But again, this is after this whole buildup, and you know, with like building up Eleven, getting her like, okay, we're gonna psych her up right now, get her ready to go, and then it's just like suddenly it's like back to the darkness. Here's what she's about to face.
Yeah,
is this thing
right?
And then you realize that Max has been on the radar of this Vecna character. I mean, I love that. It's still, I think I brought it up last time, but it's funny to me that they still just take the name Vecna because it was something that Eddie created in his campaign for D&D.
Yeah.
And they're just like, we're just going to call this thing Vecna now.
Yeah, so why is it Vecna? Why is it
because.
Demigorgon? Why is it Demodog? But it's the upside down. Let's use every name from Dungeons and
just
Dragons.
To piss you off, Chuck.
Let's use
That's it.
Every
That's
name
it.
From Dungeons and Dragons for everything else.
Everything else.
Except for the upside down. Yeah. We can't call it the Veil of Shadows. No. It's still the upside.
This I think I kind of agree with me here. I think it's there just for a troll.
Just
I think the Duffer brothers sat there and did, this is going to drive them crazy. I think this.
This
really
do
so think
this. This is so stupid, it'll work.
It'll exactly
so
that, yeah,
stupid.
I think
it'll
the same
work.
Thing. It's so stupid, it'll work. And it will piss off people who know what this kind of stuff is. It works. It does work.
Right. Uh-huh. It does work. It does make sense.
Yes.
It is upside down.
Yeah.
It does make sense.
Well, the cool thing is, the coolest thing is, and I don't think I'm going to give much away here, but we finally see why it's called the upside down in this season. And I love it. I am so pumped to finally see why they call it the upside down.
Well, it's because it's literally an upside down version of this.
Right. Well, yeah. But there's a visual thing they do later in the season.
And they're really riding their bikes.
Huh?
When they're riding their bikes on the street and they're riding through the town, all of a sudden it flips and they flip it.
And you see the upside down of it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they're still riding their bikes in
it's
the upside down.
It's not what I'm talking about. You haven't seen it yet. My point is there's something later on that comes in and it's actually really, really cool. And it's one of the only things I really remember visually. One of the few things I remember visually from this season. And I thought it was really, really well put together. And it kind of gives you more of a sense of like, okay, upside down, you know, it kind of works with it. And I think it's fantastic. We'll get there. It's not.
So, yeah. So here's what I was saying in the beginning before we got into spoiler territory. They're setting this up that Max is going to be one of the next to die. The clock happens. He's calling her name. She realizes that she has all the quote-unquote symptoms that everybody else has.
Yep.
And she's now on the radar.
Yep.
The next episode is called Dear Billy. This is it's kind of almost like Dear Eleven from Hop, you know, from the afterlife, writing this letter.
Mm-hmm.
And they're setting it all up. One of two things, in my opinion, could potentially happen. Either A, she dies. And if she dies because of all of this, that'll suck, because I think she's one of the best characters in the episode right now.
Mm-hmm. If she dies, she dies.
Two, the reason why this could be set up for a season, like this could be the second to last episode and Dear Billy could be the season finale,
sure,
is if she is set up to be the one who goes next, everybody figures it out and then they prevent it from happening. So I don't want to, that's just one of my theories. Because to your point, Will, I'm hoping something else different happens, because right now that is very much on the nose as to what is being set up for the next episode, because she is now she's going to be the center. Because like we said, in season one, it was all about Will.
Mm.
In season two, it was all about Mike.
Mm-hmm.
In season three, it was all about, I don't know, everybody.
Yeah.
Steve and Robin.
Yeah. Yeah.
In this season, it's all about Max so far. She is like the piece that's holding, she's like the hub of everything going on right now.
Yeah.
It's funny, when they first introduced Max, it was in season two,
season
right?
Two. Yeah.
She was first introduced. And when she's introduced, you're kind of like, why are they introducing her? She's like outside of the circle. What are they going to do with her? I don't think anybody really expected her to be given this big of a part, you know, until everything with Billy like really became a big deal. Like they maybe thinking that, you know, she's dealing with an annoying situation and something might change there. But I don't think they when they were originally doing it, they were planning on her going this far.
I'm actually,
well, same thing with Steve.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Steve was supposed to be just the jock, dummy, whatever. Like,
I'm guessing he was written in for season one, and then they're like, oh my gosh, this guy fits in the ensemble. How? And he went through that awkward stage. With Max, she never went through an awkward stage.
Not really.
No, not really.
She's just been fit in the whole
unless
time.
Unless you want to say everything that's happening to her now is her awkward stage.
Mm. Yeah.
But it fits in the story, though. Like, you could tell Steve's awkward stage was awkward.
Sure.
What she's going through fits into the story.
Sure.
It's the premise of the story. It actually fits.
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's
and
fantastic.
You know what? And you're right. Lee's right. I did not expect them to do all of this with Max when I first went through the series. I honestly expected, she's just here in the group because Eleven isn't. And as soon as Eleven gets roped back around into the group, they will write Max off. Like, that's kind of how I felt. Like, I was like, this character is not going to, like, make it to the end of the second season. I wasn't expecting her to die. I was just figuring they'll move away or something will happen and she'll be, like, in the background or something like that. She was a friend for a while, and now Eleven's back and she's no longer needed. I'm glad they didn't do that, because it would have been super cliche. Like, I'm really happy that they did the I'll get it out. That they did it this way instead.
Right. They should somehow find a way to bring Barb back in.
Well,
maybe she's still in the Upside Down.
Huh. So
we never saw a body. I mean, we did.
She was
but we didn't eat.
Yeah, we kind of did see a body that was like half digested.
But it was so weird. Like,
because she was eaten.
I know, but the last thing we saw was her get dragged. And then we just saw, like, the body. It seemed like, I don't know.
She was eaten.
For her being such a big character, I mean, she was a big character in the beginning. She was Nancy's best friend. It just...
Was that a...
Hmm?
She was a big character, huh? She had, like, four scenes.
I mean, in the beginning. Like, she was important, is my point.
She was important.
Like,
she was important.
It seemed very
Nancy.
Strange the way that... Yes, it seemed very strange the way that they did it. Because when they killed her off... It was like Eleven saw her in the water world, you know, that she goes to there.
Yeah.
And then that was it. And you're like, oh, okay.
You brought it up. We need to do that movie now.
Oh, no. The eyeball.
Maybe, you know
what? That's my next suggestion is Kevin Costner's water world.
Let's do it. Let's do it. Let's rip it apart.
We can either do that or what was it? Postman?
Dances with Wolves.
Well,
hey, that was actually a decent movie.
Uh-huh. That was basically just Pocahontas, and yeah,
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on the basketball team out there up to no good looking for Eddie?
So Jason and his whole crew, and it's like, we just want to talk to him, but then like they go and meet his band and then just tear it up. Like,
and they get like crowbars and metal pipes.
Yeah.
Just a conversation. No.
Just a conversation.
And Lucas is just I honestly don't understand why he said the only thing, there's two things, and it's one of them is stupid, and I feel like it's a cop out. And it, like, when they were saying, you don't have to come if you don't want to, you know, you're still part of the crew. Like, that's an easy out. Yeah, man, I'm just going to head out, whatever. So, one, he wants to be in the crew, and he thinks that even though they say that, he still needs to be there so he can stay in the crew, even though it's only, like, four of them, and all the other team is nowhere to be found. So I think that that's a cop-out. The other option is maybe his thought is if he's there with them, he can do what he's doing here, is, like, get the insider information and warn his friends. You know, but it doesn't really come off like that's really his main plan. It seems like when he does do that, it's a last second decision.
Yeah, but
so I mean, it doesn't really seem to fit.
There's one part that doesn't fit with this whole thing is when he's in Dustin's room and he's on the CB and he's talking.
Was it Dustin's room? Okay, I thought he went back to his own house. I didn't know whose house he was at.
Why would he climb in through his own window?
We saw Dustin using that ham radio earlier on when he was talking to Susie.
So he's talking.
Oh, it was the radio. I thought he had the walkie. I didn't
know.
No,
he had the CB.
Okay. Yeah, he's using the CB. Radio. Yeah.
And they're talking back to him. Why, when the guys were in the room asking him what he was doing, why did they not hear Max's voice coming through?
No idea.
Nope.
No idea. Because bad guy stupid because TV show.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically what I come up with this. Bad guy stupid because TV show.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
I agree with Lee. I think the only reason why Lucas agreed to go along with this is to get information, inside information, and then me and my friends can have the upper hand later on because I know what I think that's exactly what's happening.
I think that's what they're trying to put across, but honestly, I don't think it's executed well because, again, it looks like every time he does that, it seems like a last-minute, like, panic decision.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like he's on his game at all.
Nope, because that's not... I don't think that's why he's doing it. I think he desperately wants to fit in.
Yeah.
And he's doing whatever he can to fit in, and he just happens to have the opportunity. That's why he lies along the way all the time.
Yeah, well, friends don't lie.
They all lie in this episode. In this season.
Friends didn't lie.
So
they do now.
They do this season. But I think that he is doing this because he is desperately wanting to get away from the being typecasted as the nerd.
Yeah.
And he wants to expand. And
well, he's not typecast as the nerd. His sister is, because he blames everything on his sister. Everything.
Because he's a freshman in high school and he can do that. When he was in, up until this point, he was a nerd.
Oh, so he's the new guy now. He's Gil.
Of course he's
Gil Harris.
Yes.
True.
Of course he's the new guy.
Very
true. High school. But I think there are times where he's like, oh, I can definitely use this to my advantage. I don't think he's thinking it through, though.
No, he's not. He's very uncoordinated in this whole scenario.
Which is why I don't get how he made that final shot, because he's super uncoordinated.
Yeah,
it doesn't fit his character.
I want to know. Okay, so let's say that I agree with the two of you, and Lucas is just doing everything because he wants to fit in. Why run?
Well, because he's obviously torn.
Yeah, but
like he doesn't want Eddie to get hurt.
Yeah, but
and
what
now
was,
he's gonna get.
I'm just
he's
saying,
get
like,
for lying.
What
now.
Was the big thing that happened in the abandoned house or the shack or wherever they were that made him want to run? Like, he's all on board with trying to fit in. He's like steering them in the wrong direction. He goes along for the ride, and he's still like, okay, we're here now. What do I do? Run. Like, I don't.
Why? Because now he's going to get caught.
Now he's going to get caught.
He, that's what I'm saying. He hasn't thought the process through.
No.
And now he's, oh, I didn't think this far, and now here I go. Now I have to run.
Okay.
But the thing is, though, is this whole basketball team Lucas story, I'm not I'm not invested in it. I don't care.
It, yeah.
Neither am I. Neither am I. Because they're not, the basketball team, ultimately.
It's all about Eddie.
Yeah. Well,
the whole thing is all about Eddie.
The whole thing is all about Eddie. But the thing is, the basketball team, ultimately, in the grand scheme of things, are not a threat. That's why I think this storyline does not work out. Here we have basketball team that's just going around looking to beat somebody up. And over here we have demon that's ripping limbs and breaking bones with its mind. There's only one threat here. So it's like, that's why I could never get invested with the basketball team story arc.
What I can finally say about this now that we're three episodes in.
Sure.
I would say Jason is more like Billy than Eddie is. So it's kind of why I didn't agree with you when you kept saying that he's the new Billy. And I'm like, because he has hair. That's the only thing.
I don't think he is.
Jason is more because he's the human physical threat. That's it.
He is not a physical threat at
Jason?
All. Yeah.
And his crew with crowbars?
Yeah.
If they found Eddie's not like a tough guy.
No.
I wasn't comparing Eddie as the tough guy.
I know. I know.
You're stuck on it, but
I don't
know. I'm just thinking like as a
Jason,
part of a story.
I'm sorry. Jason is the popular prep jock.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he is.
Right.
That is not the same as the outcast rebel.
No, I'm talking about as a plot point, as a part of a story. You have to have these little parts of a story kind of filled in.
And what I'm saying is,
Jason is just another version of Steve.
Right.
Only that's what Steve could have become had he not turned his life around and stopped being a jerk. That's exactly what Steve would have been. That's
right. If they didn't kill Billy off, Jason would still be here and Eddie would not be written in. They wrote in Eddie because they killed Billy off. Jason would still be there though.
Let's watch the season.
Oh, it's
I just don't think it's comparable. He's another person with long hair.
That's not what I'm... You are on a completely different page than what I'm on. Because if you search us online, everybody else says the same thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He was written in because Billy was... He's not an extension... You're taking it as I'm saying he's an extension of... He's like an exact replacement of Billy. And
no,
I'm not saying that.
No, I'm saying there's a difference between what the character represents in a show. You know, what part of the story they're filling. And what somebody looks like.
I'm not talking about what he looks like.
As far as demographic.
I'm not talking about demographic or looks. I am saying that he was the outcast rebel. Too old for high school. He was the outcast rebel. He just happened to be a jerk.
Right.
Eddie is the outcast rebel who just happens to be a little bit nicer and goofy.
It's weird because I don't feel like Billy was outcast. I feel like everybody thought Billy was awesome.
Who?
All the people around, at least all
the old ladies at the pool.
Everybody.
That's all you got.
Because he was a lifeguard.
The middle-aged women at the pool think that Billy's awesome. That's all you have.
Because he had a physique.
Yeah.
Everybody has a physique. It just comes down.
I'm saying he was in shape.
He was in shape. He worked out. He took
care
of his body.
Eyes
shape.
Yeah.
They were googly-eyed over him because of
Power Ranger.
Get ready, ladies.
Outside of that. He had no friends.
Yeah.
He had zero friends.
Yeah, pretty
he
much.
He was an older, outcast rebel who happened to be a jerk. Eddie was casted as an outcast, older rebel who happens to be a drug addict and a drug dealer or a drug dealer. He's a drug dealer, but he just happens to be a little nicer.
Mm.
That's the only difference. That's the only difference between these two. Outside of that, if Billy remained into this season, Eddie would never have been casted for this season. The season would have been written completely different because, like the whole Dear Billy stuff, like that stuff, and Max wouldn't be going through.
We're not doing that now. We're not doing that now, because I'm going to talk a lot about how the season was written next week.
Yes.
A lot. I'm going to talk a lot. We're going to talk a lot. We're going to have a really long, well, not long, but we're going to have a conversation about how this season was written next week. Because I am convinced this season, the final words, or like the touch-ups, or the final draft of this season was written because of what happens next week. I believe this 100%. You'll get there. You'll understand what I'm talking about. That's why I don't want to have this conversation right now about
That's what I'm saying. It's like if Billy was alive, this season would be completely different than it is now.
If Billy was alive, we'd have a lot more problems.
Right. Yeah. Right. But we're only, what I'm trying to say is, we're only introduced to Eddie because Billy was written off the series. If Billy was never written off the series, we would never be introduced to Eddie.
Yeah, because we would have a whole different story.
Because there wouldn't be a need for that character to be filled. Because that empty space needed to be filled with somebody who was similar in that, but it's just they went a different route with the rebel.
Then where's Bob Newby's replacement?
Murray?
Murray is Bob Newby's replacement?
Well,
okay. What are the comparisons? What are the similarities here?
No, we're not. Hold on, we're not doing that. The two of you were getting bogged down because neither one of you have said it, and I'm shocked. We're not talking about. Neither one of you are talking about what's happening on the show. You're both talking about things that are happening behind the scenes in the writer's room. At casting calls. That's the conversation that the two of you are having, and neither one of you will just come out and say that.
I know.
Just say that.
I said that.
This has nothing to do. This has nothing to do with character. It has nothing to do with whether or not Eddie and Billy mirror one another or not. This has to do with somebody sitting down on a writing table saying, "We need a replacement for Billy. What are we going to do? Oh, I got an idea.
That's what I
Eddie.
Said. That's why I
that's
said it's demographics.
That's what this is. That's that. That's
it's about.
All,
it's about filling.
That's all it is." It's not. It has. I don't.
So that. So you're right. So that's exactly what I never thought of it that way. To be honest with you.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right. When I'm saying that they wrote him in to replace, because there was that gap of that lack of character. So how do we get another older guy who is still in high school, who doesn't belong in high school, who's a rebel, who's an outcast, who's that? Let's make him a little bit different. He's not a jerk. He's a drug dealer. Eddie. Versus Billy. Is he the same? And that's where I think Lee thinks I'm saying he is the same. You are.
No, I like Will just said, there's a difference between what's happening in the story and what was happening with, you know, behind the scenes stuff.
And I'm not.
When it comes down to what you are saying is a demographic. It's about a demographic.
This is very much behind the scene stuff.
Yeah.
But the problem that I think that the two of you are running into is somewhere, and both of you have done it, be honest, somewhere you're like trying to rope in story with production, and they don't mix well when we're talking about like replacing certain characters. They don't mix.
Right.
You can't have that. No. You can't have both conversations going on at the same time. You either have to be talking about one or the other. So
the reason why I say that is
Like, this is a way off comparison, but like back in 60s, 70s, Bewitched, when Dick York was written off, but they brought in Dick Sargent, they just replaced that character, same person, same name, married to a witch, blah, blah, blah. That is production and show kind of meeting together in the middle and saying, we're just going to replace this guy and we're just not going to talk about it. Here is something completely different.
I'm pretty sure it was Wayne's World where Wayne was just sitting there going, wait a second. Dick York, Dick Sargent, Sergeant York. It all makes sense now.
Sergeant York.
I can't wait for the next episode.
Yeah.
You're going to have to.
Yeah.
I mean,
it is going to be.
Unless you want to watch it while you go down to the airport.
It is going to be fun.
Fun. To say the least.
But anyways, what else happens? Anything else happen? Not much really. We kind of went through it all.
No. What are your, let's just talk about.
I have a question for the two of you, and then I'm going to let Lee go. I have a question for the two of you, because I still can't figure it out, And maybe the two of you have seen, I'm going to be honest, the two of you have probably seen a lot more movies than I have. I don't, what is the clock referencing? The clock, the grandfather clock is referencing something from pop culture, kind of like the way that Nightmare on Elm Street is scattered throughout this entire thing. The grandfather clock is something, and I can't figure it out.
I think grandfather clocks have just always, ticking clock is always showing the time is running out.
Fine.
Right. Which is, so I don't think it's a specific reference. I think it's more just like...
I think it's an original thing for this TV show. They're bringing everything else in, and then this is their originality, their original thing that they're just adding into the mix of all the nostalgia.
It's not an original idea. I mean, it's an original idea if you're looking at it as, and it takes place in the 80s, because nothing in the 80s that I can think of was focused on some grandfather clock that was like somehow like... I don't know, melted into the wall or a tree or whatever. I mean, all I can think of is the Cuckoo Clock of Doom from Goosebumps, which was obviously later on in the 90s when it was written. But
right, but when I say original, is there's not...
There's no reference here.
There's no reference to any horror show with the sound is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
The clock itself looks great. It's the same clock. I'm willing to bet
the only thing
that
I can
clock is in the house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it has to be. I think all that stuff is kind of like creeping its way in, and that's the point.
It's in his house.
The closest thing I could come up with was The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe. Because the clock is constantly ticking in the background. And it's like driving the person nuts.
Mm-hmm.
The Simpsons?
No. Well, Nevermore. Nevermore.
Yeah,
Nevermore.
The Simpsons, but the actual poem.
Right.
I don't know.
James Earl Jones lended his voice just for that, and that's amazing.
Yeah.
It's so great.
Okay, so,
So, what are our thoughts on Argyle?
I was in it for 10 seconds.
I'm just talking about in general at this point. We're three episodes into this character that we've been introduced to. I don't really remember... I really don't remember this season as much as I feel like I remember the other ones, but then again, it's just because we've gone through the other ones again. So I'm just going to kind of speculate and just guess that, like, not much is really going to happen with this character. But, like, what do we think about what he is now? What is his purpose right now in the show? Is he just a distraction just to keep Jonathan from doing anything serious here? Is that really the only reason he's here? Or do we think that he's going to... I guess I'm asking Chuck. Do we think he's going to step up, he's going to figure out what's going on and get in on it, and then play a big part? Like, what do you think?
No.
No. You think that he's literally just there to be a distraction, just to be comedic?
Well, he's high all the time. I don't think that he's, like, with it enough to be like, this is what's going on. And I think that he's in California.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think that I think he's just Jonathan's California friend.
Yeah. How high are you? Hi, how are you? He's so nice. Yeah.
These things happen all the time. That's why they're plastic, rubber, whatever, rubber. You know,
your face smashed. Murray. Oh, they got smashed?
It's a good thing it wasn't an ice skate. Oh my god, because it would get clean. It would get cleaned off.
Oh man.
I agree.
He's a filler character.
Yeah. My thoughts on Argyle is he is the comedic relief. And here's the thing. And I don't remember. So even if somewhere in the season or in season 5, if they do this, whatever he does, I just think it's gonna be stupid. Like, he'll have your typical pothead revelation.
Yeah, he might have, like, something that's helpful. Like, that's actually helpful for a second. Yeah. And that's going to be it.
What he does, yeah.
That's a trope. Somebody, yes, like...
Very much so.
Like, the whole thing with Robin, where she's, like, you know, being goofy. She goes, what about this? And you know, Nancy's, like, rolling her eyes. She goes, no, seriously. If anything is going to be written about weird stuff, it'll be here. And then you see Nancy kind of, like, flip, like, oh.
I can see it now. He'll be high, smoking a joint or something like that, and Vecna will, like, pick him up, and he'll just, like, blow smoke in Vecna's face, and he'll put him back down because he's getting high, too.
That would be the biggest smack in the face. That would be the biggest smack in the face.
With a roller skate?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it'd be like Freddy Krueger with the syringes. Little
worm. No,
it'd be like Freddy versus Jason with the little worm dude.
When he turns into the worm?
With like, yeah. he just comes in and he's like, hey, man. They start smoking his tail.
Stupid.
Welcome to prime time.
Stupid. It's so stupid.
Yeah, it's so bad.
Yeah.
But anyway, I mean.
Does Vecna have a line like, welcome to prime time?
No.
Or.
No, he doesn't.
Welcome to my, this, oh, this is my world. Or welcome to, that's what Nancy says. Welcome to my world.
Well, no, he does say it at one point, but then she says it back to him.
So yeah, I said, Nancy says, welcome to my world.
Yeah, I don't remember really a whole lot of, I know that eventually, I'm not giving anything away. I know eventually, like, yeah. He talks. I just don't remember a bunch of what he said.
No,
that
he talks
for the whole thing.
It goes,
Max.
Yeah, Max.
He talked
join
to
me.
Chrissy. He talked to Chrissy the whole time.
Join me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Fred.
Okay, sure. Fred.
Fred Durst.
Sure. Okay, Freddy anyways. Benson.
So, with that being said, I do need to close up. I have to go to the airport.
Skediddle.
All right.
I got to go to the airport.
All right.
You know.
Yep.
Good stuff.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
So with that being said, thanks everyone for joining us on this riveting conversation. I am looking forward to the next episode and the remainder of this season, and then the long wait to season 5.
Yeah.
So join us next week for episode 4 of Stranger Things, season 4.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Everyone. See ya.